If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now here's your hosts, Chris Elfheim and Emily Cephos.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Rational Revolution. I'm Emily Cephos, one of the hosts of the show, along with my friend Chris Elfheim, who is out of the evening enjoying some lovely weather down south. Thanks for joining us this evening on WGBW 97.9, Oshkosh Air Support 98.3, and the Civic Media app. We are a show that's dedicated to talking through hot button political issues through a politically purple lens, because we know there's more that unites us than divides us. And our aim each week is to talk through issues with respect that offer different perspectives, cut through the noise, and dig into issues that affect our families and friends throughout Wisconsin. I'm excited to be here, and I've got two guests for you tonight so that you don't have to listen to me alone for the next hour, and they're going to be talking through some issues that are top of mind in our state. I'm excited to welcome, in short order, former Republican Congressman Reid Ribble on the first half of the show to discuss a potential SCOUS impeachment, and Denise Gaumer-Hutchison of Wisconsin Public Education Network for the second half to discuss the precarious position of our public schools. But before we get into it, I want to pull you in, Jason. I want to ask how you doing? How was your week? How was Labor Day weekend?
It was very interesting.
Yeah?
Yeah, we dropped our oldest off at college.
Oh my goodness.
At UW Stout.
So that's a big deal.
That was interesting.
Yeah, did they do the timed entry kind of thing for parking, or was it pretty
chill?
Yeah,
where we had to sign up.
Oh, yeah, wow.
That was really weird. And we had to go through like this racetrack to go through check-in, and
they had it all,
get a slip, and then we only had like 20 minutes to unload, so that was awesome.
How did you even do you just leave a pile of stuff and go park your car or what?
Yeah, no, they let me pull up on the sidewalk actually.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was great.
Yeah, well, that is good.
Yeah, so we weren't too far from the door. And
was it as hot as it was?
Oh, yeah, it was gross.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
My daughter had a soccer tournament, and it was 7 and 8 year olds playing in that heat, especially on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just, I felt bad for them. I was like, hydrate, kids. We need rags and ice and all the things. It was, yeah, it was a rough time. But now we're settling in, it seems, to some cooler temps.
And I'm sure they didn't complain at all.
No, no. Yeah, definitely no complaining from the 7 and 8 year olds sweating it out in the sun all weekend.
And why do I have to be out here?
I know. Over and over and over again. But exactly, we got through it, and you're
awesome,
stronger for it. So,
right?
Yeah, congratulations to your son on being at Stout. Is
Thank
he enjoying
you.
The first couple days?
Yes, so far.
Good.
He's glad going to class, so win.
Hey, that's a win.
That is a win.
We'll take it. Nice.
That's right.
Well, it has been a week, you guys. Labor Day was gorgeous. Kids across Wisconsin are back in school, and parents like myself are rejoicing. We have hurricanes hitting Florida and a political firestorm that seems to be pummeling our state legislature. So I am going to take this moment to introduce our first guest, and tell you a little bit about him. Can I confirm that Congressman Ribble, are you in the building via the phone?
Emily, I am in the building. I'm here.
Perfect. So Reid James Ribble was born in Neenah, Wisconsin, and graduated from Appleton East High School. He attended Cornerstone University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And following school, Reid joined the family's roofing company in Kaukauna, becoming president in 1977 and retired from the company in 2009. Reid's interest in politics then led him to run for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. He defeated an incumbent for the Wisconsin 8th Congressional District on November 2nd of 2010 and served in that capacity until January 3rd, 2017, leaving Congress fulfilling a pledge to term limit himself. That's unheard of with most of them, so good for you. As a representative, he served on the House Budget and Finance Committee, Agriculture Committee, Foreign Affairs Committee, and Transportation Committee. And during his tenure, he wrote the only bipartisan legislation designed to fully protect Social Security for 75 years. After Congress, Reid accepted a position as CEO of the National Roofing Contractors Association in 2017 and retired in 2022. And today he volunteers time on numerous boards as a practitioner in residence at UWGB, and spends time with his wife, Deanna, and his children and grandchildren. I'm so pleased to welcome you, former Congressman Reid, to the program, or Ribble, sorry. Welcome. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, and I appreciate you and Chris inviting me to occasionally come on and talk about whatever hot button issue of the day is in front of us.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Great. I'm very excited. Yes. Chris has known you for a while, I believe, and I'm really excited to
have
these continued conversations with you. I think you offer a unique perspective that is different from maybe my experience and my views. So I'm excited to have some lively, fruitful conversations with you. and we can just like hit it off if that's okay with you, because we've got a lot to talk about. So this week we've seen a lot happening regarding that potential impeachment of Justice Janet Protasiewicz. So she's, for our listeners, she is the newest member of the state Supreme Court and just won an election back in April with over 1 million votes to Daniel Kelly's 818,000, an 11-point victory, which is like crazy for statewide races in this state. Usually they're real nail biters. And her election shifted the Supreme Court's ideological balance from 4-3 conservative to 4-3 progressive. And both sides, I would say, I don't know if you'd agree with me, Congressman, they went all out in trying to get their preferred candidate elected. It seemed like this was one of the most politicized nonpartisan, quote unquote, nonpartisan elections in recent memory. Do you agree with that?
I would. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, typically, Supreme Court races are generally pretty quiet from a party standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, the political parties themselves don't get involved in any funding. They may, on occasion, but not always, have a Supreme Court justice that might align with their ideological view come to for Republicans, a Lincoln Day dinner or some GOP county meeting. I think the Democrats do the same thing because mm-hmm. that's how you connect with a base of voters that are likely going to support you from an ideological viewpoint. But this particular one not only became more political, it became more partisan than anything I can remember recently.
Yeah, I mean, definitely was more partisan than I've ever seen. And I think it was a total of $42 million that was spent on this race.
Shocking number.
Yes.
It's a shocking number. Listen, Ronald Reagan won the White House.
Yeah.
With $40 million.
Oh, my God. That is something to consider. Holy, I did not know that number. That is wild. Do you think then, the importance of this, I think when we're talking Supreme Court in the state has 10-year terms. So we're looking at that shift in ideological balance for the next, till 2033. I mean, with her anyway. What do you think was the reasoning for that sudden partisanship? Do you think it was like what was on the line, I guess?
Yeah, I think that voters on the left were animated by the Dobbs decision
mm-hmm.
and that the entire abortion decision not only animated Democrat voters, but it in particular animated young people.
Right.
And so college students, young women who were either married or single were seeing this through a lens of saying, hey, this has been a right in the country for 50 years. It's not right or correct that they take this away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And voters were animated by it. And so I think that a lot of donors around the country, particularly those that are pro-choice, saw an opportunity to make a statement in Wisconsin. And they provided adequate funding and support to really drive this. And I think that was the predominant issue. And boy, it was a wipeout. I mean, I did not expect it. I thought it would be a 1 or 2 point race. I did think she was going to win. I didn't think Dan Kelly was the strongest mm-hmm. candidate that the right could put forward.
Yeah.
But that's who they decided. And often voters have a tendency to pick really bad primary candidates and they wonder why things go south on them.
Right, right. And I think like it was the turnout amongst the younger generations was in my opinion, like a full-throated mandate from those voters, like you mentioned.
It was a shocking number, shocking amount of voters for a Supreme Court race.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. It's not usually on anyone's radar.
Emily, do you think my analysis there is correct? I mean,
I do. I think, myself personally, that's one of the reasons that I was really pushing for Justice Protasiewicz to get in there, because like as a woman of childbearing age, a mother that, I feel that intimately, and I'm raising a daughter. And so that was like, yep, we need to mobilize around this. And I know that was felt across the state as well. Yeah. And so I guess we can kind of fast forward to the past couple of weeks, because I know it started with some rumors and then some tweets, as it usually does. But what we're looking at now is that, I think the Republicans were in closed committee yesterday. The Dems have dropped a $4 million campaign, and it's all about the potential impeachment of Justice Protasiewicz. And to back up just quickly for it, my understanding from what I've read is that in the GOP's mind, as a candidate, she campaigned against the state's gerrymandered maps and called them rigged. And Republicans claim that that means she's impermissibly prejudged the Clark case that was brought immediately after her investiture and must recuse herself from it. Is that fair to say, or do you have a different understanding?
Yeah, no. I think that's fair to say. She used two words that would imply that she's predetermined or has a personal bias on mm-hmm. the case. She used the word rigged, which is, that's taken right out of a Trump playbook. Mm-hmm. But then she also called them unfair, mm-hmm. that they were unfairly determined. And so those two words, which she used regularly, I remember hearing her say that on the campaign, mm-hmm. would put her in trouble with the Code of Judicial Conduct for judges there. And because in Wisconsin, the Code of Judicial Conduct would require that a judge recuse themselves if they have a personal bias or prejudice concerning a party or party's lawyer, or personal knowledge of disputed evidentiary facts concerning the proceeding. And so what Republicans are saying is, listen, we've got her in video 100 times mm-hmm. showing that she has a bias here, so therefore we're going to impeach.
And is that now, different? Sorry, go ahead.
My personal take on it is, this is something that they should have just, in my opinion, they should have just stayed quiet on. But the base gets fired up and riled up on things.
Yeah.
And then all hell breaks loose. And so now they feel like they're a little bit trapped, because we have no idea whether she's going to recuse or not. She's not even voted on a single case yet.
Interesting. So it's something that they're finding themselves maybe having put, I don't like their foot in their mouth or walked it out too quickly.
Way too quickly. And okay. Because now it just looks totally political.
Yeah.
You know, and so. Listen, there's no absence of hypocrisy
exactly.
in the political world. And
yeah.
So on the Democrat side, they were all willing to overturn an election when they tried to recall Governor Walker.
Okay.
And yep. and now Republicans are saying we're willing to overturn an election here that we lost.
Yep.
Representative, I just find the whole thing fascinating.
I agree. We're headed to a break, but we'll see you back in just a couple of minutes. We are with Representative Reed Ribble, and we will be back with Rational Revolution right after the break. Stay tuned. Talk about destruction. Welcome back, y'all, to the Rational Revolution. My name is Emily Sefos. Chris is on a well-deserved break this evening. And we are talking about some hot issues this week with Representative Reed Ribble from the 8th Congressional District, who served for 7 years. And we are discussing the potential impeachment of Justice Janet Protasiewicz. We are on WGBW 97.9, Oshkosh Air Support 98.3. And don't forget to get that Civic Media app, because you can listen, call, and text right from the app. And we'd love to hear from you. If you want to be a part of the conversation this evening, please feel free to call 920-264-0606 or send us a text through the app. Welcome back, Congressman. We were just talking about the fascinating nature of what we are seeing happening with the newly invested justice and the Republican Party. And you were, I believe, right before the break, talking about how there was, in 2010, the Dems' move to remove Scott Walker or recall Scott Walker. So kind of hearkening back to that era.
Yeah, I was just basically using that as an example mm-hmm. of kind of the hypocrisy that I see on both sides, mm-hmm. because what you'll hear is both sides say, let the voters decide,
right,
until either side doesn't like what the voters decided. and then all of a sudden they don't want the voters to decide. And I think we're seeing that here with this particular case. I think we saw it there from the other side. And I'm just saying, I don't like a system where it works that way.
I don't think any of us do that really believe in the democratic process.
Well, right, exactly. Because it's an assault on democracy itself. Now, if she does not recuse, they could make an argument under state, under the Code of Judicial Conduct to move with an impeachment. If the Senate doesn't take it up, she still would be impeached and couldn't vote on that particular issue, but she wouldn't be removed from the court.
And do you
there's options here, but for me personally, I think they ought to let this thing play out, because I don't think you can draw a map in the state of Wisconsin that is going to change the Republican majority.
Not even
the
supermajority?
You might have it closer, but you can't draw one that would that wouldn't.
Well, I think I was, I mean, you know, all over Twitter, people are abuzz. And I know there was a video from October of 21 where Robin Voss was in a public hearing and he said partisanship was considered in the making of those maps. And so, like, for me, when I'm looking at Justice Protasiewicz, you know, repeatedly saying these things are rigged, is that not like just a factual observation?
No, of course. Well, to a certain degree it is, but it also says something about how she would be, how she would lean toward interrupting the will of the voters who put those Republicans, in this case, Republicans in charge. We could say that the maps in Illinois are even more dramatically gerrymandered by Democrats, but it is a partisan process, because under Wisconsin statute, it gives the right of the legislature, whoever's in charge of it, and voters put Republicans in charge, to draw the maps. Mm-hmm. And so it is by its very nature a political process. Now, I'm not a big fan of gerrymandering, and I'll take you guys into the room, because I was in Congress in 2011 when the maps were redrawn back then. That ended up kind of giving the Republicans this long-term majority. But literally, there was all kinds of horse trading going on about how many more voters you're going to give to Wisconsin 7 to help Sean Duffy versus giving some of his Democrats to Ron Kind to help him. And the downside from the Democratic standpoint is because they are so compacted in urban areas, you can't really, they're not distributed throughout the state equally. So it's very difficult to, when 90% of the counties in Wisconsin are red, to draw a map that would give the Democrats the majority of any time.
And I think, like, the issue that, like, I take from the Democratic side is that when we see these statewide elections, like, typically Wisconsin's much more blue than it appears via our state legislature. You know, like, we're looking at margin, you know, like a 53% voting bloc going Democratic in any one race, but we still have that supermajority that exists for the GOP in our state legislature. And I think, like, that's the, you know, like, that's the problem, in that it's not truly representative of the people of Wisconsin.
Yeah. And I would say in the Senate maps, you probably could draw a map that would be a bit more fair, you know, and add a few more seats that would automatically go to Democrats. And I'm not a big fan of gerrymandering at all.
Yeah.
Because I prefer that voters pick their representatives and
not the other way
having
around.
Representatives pick the voters.
Yes, please.
You know, and so that would be the most democratic thing to do. Mm-hmm. But in trying to draw a map that has complete precincts or complete counties for, like, the congressional maps, it can be a challenge. And if you look at the Wisconsin, I'll use the congressional map because I think it's a good example. If you look at the congressional map in Wisconsin and then compare it to our neighbor immediately to the south, to their congressional map, nobody could say that Wisconsin has gone overboard on gerrymandering on that particular map by comparison. But all of it's bad, you know, let's just let the voters decide.
I agree. I feel like we need to have you back, Congressman, for just a full hour on maps and representation, because we should just discuss it further. But before we go, because we're heading to the break soon, what implications do you think going through with impeachment would have for your party?
I think they would be mostly negative. It would inspire the base, but it would turn off independent and suburban voters.
Yeah, I would agree. I feel like the whole thing is like a nullification of over a million votes cast.
That's a real risk. That's a risky endeavor. I will tell you that.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Especially on this issue. This is the wrong issue to do it on.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I think it was, a full-throated mandate for the direction that folks wanted the state to go in and our Supreme Court to take. And yeah, would caution anyone against it.
But they're going to feel compelled because of the code of conduct. And so... we'll just have to wait and see what happens here.
Definitely. I hate to cut it short, but we have Denise on next. Got so it. Again, this is Congressman Reed Ribble. Thank you so much for joining us on Rational Revolution. Okay. We're excited to continue to talk with you in the weeks ahead. Have a great night. And thank you again for being here and being a part of the conversation.
Thanks, Emily. See you soon.
All right. So coming up next, we are going to hear from Denise Gomer Hutchison. She is with the Wisconsin Public Education Network, and she's going to be talking to us about the precarious state of our public schools here in Wisconsin. We're really excited to have her again. Thank you to the congressman for that conversation. We will be sure to have him back on, and we will be right back with you on Rational Revolution. Thanks.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge.
Welcome back, friends, to the Rational Revolution. My name is Emily Cephos. Chris Alfheim is enjoying that well-deserved rest and respite. But we are up in Green Bay at WGBW 97.9. We are also on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3. And be sure to download that Civic Media app so that you can text us, listen, and call from the app. Very convenient for all of us. We are going to switch gears now to public education in the state of Wisconsin. And I'm thrilled to be sitting here with Denise Gomer Hutchison, who is the Northeast Regional Organizer for the Wisconsin Public Education Network. That is a nonpartisan advocacy organization committed to ensuring all children in Wisconsin have access to a great public school education, no matter their zip code. Denise has also been very involved in Champions for Green Bay Public Schools, which is a parent community group that advocates for the children and families attending the Green Bay area public schools. She serves on the board of the League of Women Voters of Greater Green Bay, where she chairs the Education Committee. Denise, welcome to the Rational Revolution. So glad you're here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yes. So we are headed back to school, probably last week and this week, and we are talking about the state of our public schools this evening. We're talking about it on the tails of a pretty abysmal or disappointing summer of budget talks and signatures that have left a lot of us feeling disheartened about where our public schools lie. And I'm wondering if you can talk to start about what it means to be a public school advocate in this day and age. Like, what are your, as an organizer, what have you been doing throughout that whole process?
Well, Wisconsin Public Education Network attended all of the joint finance hearings around the state, and we collected and helped deliver people to tell their story about public education and about the impact of public education to children's, families, communities, school districts, but really looking at what's happening across the state of Wisconsin with regards to high quality public education that helps all kids.
Right. And it helps all of our communities when we're educating our kids in schools and districts that are well equipped to do so.
Right.
Yeah.
There are more children that are graduating and going into apprentice programs in the trades and in other areas than there are out of private schools. And therefore, it's our workforce.
Right.
And it's our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that when a school closes down in a community, the heart of the community really kind of leaves in that community.
Definitely.
And it impacts it in a very big way.
Yeah, we drove through Freedom on the way here tonight, and they had their JV football team. And I was talking to my mom, and I was like, oh, I remember, because I grew up in Slinger down south a little bit. And I was like, oh, remember how, like, it's just like that. Those are the moments and those are the events that bring everybody together. And it's a really it's a really incredible, like, thread, I guess, in that community fabric. And so, sports aside, when that does go away, there are so many different pieces of that community that are kind of left to the wind. I know that you said, like, school closures, things like that. And what our public schools are looking at is, like, we're in some pretty dire straits right now. And that is related to cost of goods and services, cost of maintaining buildings, things like that. What did the budget bring or not bring to public schools?
Well, for the first time in the history of the state of Wisconsin, more money is being given per child to private schools than it is to public schools.
Oh, wow.
And not only that, but for the last 16 years, public schools haven't received a cost of living increase. So, you know, the cost of fuel for buses hasn't gone down. The cost of electricity to light the buildings in the schools hasn't gone down. The cost of books haven't gone down.
Mm-hmm.
The needs of children have increased significantly. We're seeing more kids with, we're seeing kids with disabilities in our buildings. We're seeing kids with special needs in other ways. And we're educating children whose language, first language, isn't English.
Right.
And we have to be able to make accommodations because they're residents of the United States and of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a constitutional right in the Constitution for the state of Wisconsin that all children have access to an equitable public education.
That's incredible. And one of my sons actually has an IEP and goes to Freedom, and he works with 5 different professionals, like staff members, that are all supporting him throughout his days. And without those, like speaking personally, I don't know how families would afford private therapy for each of the things that he's receiving and things like that. You said something about private schools receiving money. And so from this budget, and what I would like to do, because I think it's like it's lost on people what vouchers are and what private school, you know, receipts look like from that budget. Can you explain how they get that money, why that is something that is being done, and the problem with it in your mind?
Yeah. And I want to come back and talk about special education.
Okay.
Because it's a huge issue, a funding issue in our state. And we're seeing kids who need these services and they deserve to get these services.
Right.
And so let's talk about that in a minute.
Definitely.
But let's talk about vouchers. Vouchers we were the first state in the United States to have vouchers.
Yes.
And it was supposed to be on a needs situation.
Mm-hmm.
It changed, and it changed pretty extensively. And in, I think it's 3 years, the income level, the income level will still be in place, but the amount of children who can get vouchers will go away.
The
enrollment cap will go away. And there's no plan put in place on how to deal with this.
So essentially it could just be like a waterfall into everyone.
Right. And there's a huge number of children that are now getting vouchers who have never stepped foot in a public school and chosen to leave that public school for another option. So they're getting vouchers where before their family might have paid tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're getting a voucher.
How is that legal?
I know. It's it has gone all the way to the Supreme Court once. But I think we're going to see, because there's not equal accountability.
Interesting.
You know how your kids in public schools
mm-hmm.
have to take tests, you know, the third grade reading exams, the ACT tests, all of the different testing all along the way. They don't have to do that in private schools. They can opt out. And so there's no transparency or accountability. There's also no transparency for the money. How are they using that money? Are they using it to educate the children?
And that was something that was it the most recently there was the data, right? There was supposed to be
right.
a portal available through DPI. But what was the problem with that?
The private school coalition, the charter people, and didn't want there to be this transparency.
Why?
Nobody really knows. And it's just not fair.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair. It's not equal. It shouldn't be constitutional. You know, I mean, it's like if you are getting taxpayer funds, which is what they are now getting. Mm-hmm. When a voucher is paid for, it isn't paid for by the state. It is paid for by property taxes. So you're a taxpayer in the state of Wisconsin, and a child chooses to go to a private school that is maybe a religious school or an issue-based school or something like that, but it's a private school. As a taxpayer, have no accountability. For a public school in the state of Wisconsin, at any time you can see their budget. At any time you can see how many children are in that school district. At any time you can see test scores and learn about test scores and things about that. And the accreditation of the staff and, you know, the classes that they're having to take. And the test scores are all public knowledge. You know, public information, that those tests are happening. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't say, I want to see Johnny's test score or something like that.
Right.
But none of that is now, there's no transparency in private schools.
And so am I correct in understanding then that, like, with the lack of transparency when it comes to tests, for example, we don't know the effectiveness or the, you know, like if this is increasing, because this is the argument that like better scores and better grades happen when you send your kid to a private school or a public charter or whatever it is. But there's no accountability. There's no way of knowing this. It's all like very subjectively, you know, happening.
Right. Because if you as a parent say, I'm sending Susie to XYZ private school, but I don't want her to have to take the tests. You can sign a waiver that waives you from having to take those tests. So we've just now given, you know, $12,000+
right
in a voucher, and there's no accountability. That is Susie really advancing from third to fourth grade in her reading skills? Is Susie really advancing in her math skills?
Mm-hmm.
The public schools are being held accountable for that.
And and the problem is that these are partially publicly funded. Can you explain a little bit between the funding from about like with the public schools versus those schools that receive vouchers?
Public schools get state aid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a per pupil amount that is set.
That was $325?
That's the potential increase.
Okay.
Per child.
Mm-hmm.
The new base that school districts can choose to tax up to for most schools, except for 29 school districts in the state who failed at their referendum, that they can't go up to $11,000 per child. But we're talking $11,000 per child in the public schools, potentially.
Right.
And we're talking a $12,000 voucher to a private school. Now, say that private school child is disruptive, or that private school child is challenged with disabilities that they feel unable to address.
Mm-hmm.
They can send that child back to the public school, and for that semester, they keep that money.
What?
And also, the public schools pay for all transportation to all private schools.
So the busing.
The busing.
Wow.
They do the IEPs, you know, your child's IEP.
Mm-hmm.
If that were a child at a private school and they needed an IEP assessment, the first kind of accreditation of their needs and things like that, that has to be done by the private school. Title I support
mm-hmm.
goes to private schools. So a certain amount goes to the private
school. And Title I is for low...
Is
income.
Poverty level,
yeah.
low income.
Below the poverty line.
Yeah. Okay. And it also ELL services.
Wow.
So
all these things that you're there, are they then contracting with the public schools, but the public schools are paying the staff members that are visiting the private schools mm-hmm. to provide services?
Yes. If the private school can't provide those services.
Wow.
My kids went to a public school in the Green Bay area.
Yeah.
But they had to go an hour later because the buses that they went on served the private school in our neighborhood, and they got to go to start school at 8:00.
So what is the, like, in your mind as an activist in this public education realm, because we have about a minute and a half, like, what is the perfect formula, like, as far as funding is concerned? Is there any crossover for, like, is there any vouchers at all? And why was that even, like, and I have so many questions about vouchers. Like, why did we even do that? What is the end goal? You know, like, what are we, when that enrollment cap comes off, are we going full tilt into, privatizing education? Is that the goal? Tell me it's not. We're not saying anything. That's not a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that what we want to do is ensure that every child in the state of Wisconsin, no mm-hmm. matter where they live, have access to a great public school.
And are we able to do that with
we
the way
we are not about, doing that right
okay.
now.
Gotcha.
And it's costing more and more. And what I wanted to say really quickly to go back to about special education, which is really critical, is this year alone, $1.2 billion is going to be pulled out to cover special education costs out of public schools' Fund 10 balances.
Oh my, sit with that for a minute, and we're going to repeat that when we come back. It's important enough. You are on Rational Revolution. We are talking to Denise.
Should have been gone, knowing how I made you feel, and I should have been gone.
I'm going to say welcome back to the Rational Revolution, and I'm also going to call Jason out on missing the Beatles Revolution song, but I know you still have time. Maybe at the end.
It was the first song I played.
Was it really? Yeah. Oh, I've blacked out that portion. For those of you that don't know, I get a little nervous when I'm doing these shows, especially by myself. So hope I'm doing you proud, Chris. We are back on 97.9 WGBW, 98.3 Oshkosh Air Support. We are on the Civic Media app, and we are talking to Denise Gomer Hutchison of the Wisconsin Public Education Network. I want to start out just with you repeating the fact that you stated while we were going off the air this last segment.
Yeah, I didn't finish too by saying that the federal government is the third kind of leg of the stool for public school funding,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't met their obligations, and it's a big deal.
Okay,
and it's a big deal with regards to special education,
mm-hmm.
and so because they haven't come through with their portion, you know, it has to be made up from the state, and it has to be made up first dollar,
okay.
which is really an important thing to know because children with special needs deserve to be educated just
right.
like every single other child in a public school. But they oftentimes cost more to educate.
Mm-hmm.
And so $1.2 billion in the state of Wisconsin in public schools is going to be taken out of the Fund 10 balance, which is the kind of the checking account of a school district.
Okay.
First dollar statewide to pay for special education services. Do you know what that, in the Green Bay School District alone, what that is? That's $33 million.
Oh my God.
And they're only getting an additional $1 million in this budget that came out of the new budget, the new school district budget.
So what is, when we're, these schools have been operating in the red for so long. We continue not to give them the respect and the I don't know, like, we don't even honor our public education enough to be able to fund it because, like you were saying, cost of living continues to go up. I know you mentioned before we started that, like, when you're talking about referendums and you're talking about special education, like, all of this is to keep the lights on and to keep
right.
people paid. And it's not for, you know, new couches in a cafeteria, right? It's not anything that's state of the art. It's like we are fixing roofs, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. And giving kids, you know, universal access on playgrounds.
Right.
You know, we just opened two of them in the Green Bay School District, which is very exciting that every child, no matter of their abilities, can access a playground now and
wow.
go out there and play.
Right.
And that's,
that's
we should
that
be
equitable
doing,
and accessible education
yes,
and experience.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
And we should be doing that everywhere across the state. And we're not because
mm-hmm.
of funding costs, you know. And, you know, when you haven't seen a cost of living increase for 16 years.
Right.
It has an impact.
It does. You know,
I mean, when you think about that, and it's a challenge.
So working in that in a nonpartisan role mm-hmm. with WPEN, what is the pushback? Because honestly, like I'm proponent of public school, I'm listening to you and I'm incensed. But what is the reasoning for not? You know, we have that $7 billion surplus, right? Like, what is the reasoning for not saying these public schools have been long operating, you know, cobbling things together and pulling money out of the couch cushions? Like, how do we actually support them effectively?
Well, there's people in the state of Wisconsin legislature who believe local control, okay. but then they have to give local control and they have to allow these local communities to have that control and they need to support it, you know, and if we're going to have to increase local property taxes, you know, to pay for things, that's a challenge because now you're really double dipping for right. your taxpayers, you mm-hmm. know, because they're paying for vouchers for private schools that aren't accountable.
Right.
And they're paying for public schools. But when public schools are capped in how much they can spend, then our property tax relief happens for taxpayers. Doesn't happen that way with private schools, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a big differential as well.
Right.
And so we aren't meeting our constitutional requirement to provide great, high-quality public schools that are paid for and that are equitable for all kids across the state. And that's what we want to have happen. And, you know, the nonpartisan thing is a big deal
mm-hmm.
because public education should never be a partisan issue.
No.
It should be a state of Wisconsin. We care about the future of our state. You know, when I moved here, the whole Wisconsin Forward message
right.
was very exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also when I moved here, Wisconsin and Iowa and Minnesota were like 1, 2, and 3 for ACT tests and scores and things like that. And we were a very proud state about our public education.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be there again.
Right.
Because the kids in this state are the future of this state.
Definitely. And again, like you said at the beginning of our conversation, the investment that you make in your public schools to make sure that these children are being educated in an accessible, equitable way that is effective, like pays dividends down the road.
Right. Right?
They become functioning and contributing members of society. They become our workforce.
Right.
Yeah.
I just love the fact that in Green Bay, for an example, they have Baylink Manufacturing mm-hmm. is in one of their school buildings and they have an apprentice program and those kids are learning how to do that. There are kids that are graduating from the Green Bay Area Public Schools with a CNA degree.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's all kinds of dynamic, wonderful things happening. We have kids who are on Broadway from this school district. And this is just Green Bay. I mean, and it's true all the way around.
Yeah, there's such talent that exists.
Yes.
And we just need to make sure that they are
given their opportunity
to reach their full potential. Yeah. Exactly. Well, it has been a pleasure talking to you this evening. Thank you so much for joining us, Denise. I really appreciate it and all the work you're doing for our public schools on behalf of my kiddo who's at Freedom Elementary. Like, really, really appreciate all of the advocacy that you've been doing and will continue to do, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. Yes. We've got a lot of fights ahead and we're going to keep fighting because it's too important.
It is too important.
For your kiddos and all the other kiddos. And so call your legislators.
Yeah.
Do what you have to do and make them accountable and make them understand our public schools matter.
Definitely. I think that this is both conversations tonight are a good reminder that accountability matters, that our kiddos matter, that, you know, our Constitution matters, whether it becomes to a Supreme Court justice or our public schools and the way that they're funded. And so, again, look out your legislators, give them a call, remind them that you're paying attention, that you voted them in, and that you're their boss, really. That's how this is supposed to work. Thanks so much for joining us on Rational Revolution. This is Emily Cephos. Have a great night, everyone, and we will see you next week with Chris back at the helm with myself. Have a great night.